love. Yes, beg him door to door. But finds the silence like no one listening.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 405 of the Side Quest, your weekly video game and geek culture podcast. Today, we're reporting to you live from the top of, well, let's call it the Willis Tower. It used to be called the Sears Tower. Today, we're on the Willis Tower. And that intro was a load of garbage because I screwed it up halfway through, but we're going to continue recording. I'm Dally Domofsky. Joining me as usual, Eric Smith.
When was the last time we didn't record live?
Like do a live show?
I mean, like, you always say recording live. Like, when was the last time we actually did a full edit of a podcast?
Who knows?
Exactly.
Also joining us, we have an awesome special guest today, Brian McClary. Am I pronouncing it right, McClary?
That is correct.
And he is, his wonderful title is Social and Emerging Media Analyst over at Forward. And we have him on for a specific reason, which we'll get to at the end of the show. That's half the reason. The other half is that he's just as much of a geek as we are and gamer. So it's totally a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. This podcast is already epic just off of that introduction, so I'm ready to go.
I've been doing my best to get the energy flowing.
I dig it. It sounded like Randy Macho Man for a second there.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, snap into Macho a Slim Jim. All right.
Snap into a Slim Jim, brother. You know, it's funny.
R.I.P., sadly. R.I.P.
What's funny is my wife, when she was younger, they have a condo down in Florida, and she was like 16 or 17 or something, and she used to watch wrestling when she was growing up. Don't judge my wife.
Wife hooked on it. Wife hooked on it. Don't judge me.
And so they were walking out of a restroom at a beach, and who walked past them into the men's restroom but Macho Man Randy Savage. So she waited for him outside of the restroom till he came out, and she went to shake his hand, and then he's like, do you really want to shake my hand right now? She's like,
amazing story. Stalking Randy Macho Man Savage outside of a men's room. That is awesome.
And this is the best way to start a podcast.
Oh, gosh.
Well, it's going to be a great show. We have a lot of cool stuff to talk about. A lot of news popped up this week. Some big game reveals. And we're going to dive right into the game portion of the show by talking about what we've been playing. And Brian, since you're the guest today, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been playing?
I just listened to your guys' last podcast, and I'm just as guilty of having a big backlog of games right now. I have so much stuff I want to play, but I really just haven't had much time, to be honest with you. Things have been crazy at work. I was on vacation. But over break, while I was out, I was playing a lot of handheld gaming. We got a PlayStation Vita at work when it launched, and I borrowed it for vacation. So I was playing a little bit of Golden Abyss, which I'm pretty geeked about. It's a fun game.
That's one of the ones that I've been playing as well. How do you feel about it in relation to kind of the console Uncharted games?
You know, it's a portable version. It's not the overall version like you get on your PS3. I wasn't expecting a full Uncharted experience, but I'm pretty blown away by what they've done in the title for a handheld game. But I still kind of question, do you really want to have that full epic experience on a handheld? I think just the way the market's going overall, I don't think people really want to spend, you know, 3+ hours in a handheld game. I mean, I'm on chapter like 12, I think, and that's probably a couple hours in. And, you know, I look at handheld gaming as, you know, quick snippets, but I downloaded this really good pinball game on there. I'm a huge pinball geek. So I have this game on my iPhone, and it has like some of my favorite. What's that?
Is it Pinball Arcade with the Williams and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And I was a huge, you know, I'm a huge pinball guy still to this day, and it's my dream to have a few machines. But I've been playing that a lot. And then what else? Modern Warfare 3, I jumped back in on there, and still getting killed by a bunch of, you know, 12 and 13 year olds. But
are you an Elite subscriber?
No, I'm not.
I
don't agree with it.
Oh, I actually don't mind it. I am, but I just feel like a asshole because I subscribed to it. I didn't pay for it, thankfully, but I haven't used it in a month and a half.
Yeah, I actually didn't play for a long time. I got Modern Warfare 3, and you know, I'm still a sucker for the single-player campaign, and I beat And I jumped in for a minute and was just getting smoked, and I just put it down for a while, and I love Battlefield. I'm a big Battlefield fanboy. I just like the different style of play for that game. And I kind of got sick of Battlefield for a little bit, and I jumped back in to Modern Warfare 3 when they were doing double XP the last few weeks. And I got kind of hooked back on that again, but that's pretty much what I'm playing right now. There's a lot of stuff I really want to play. Like, I have all the Assassin's Creed games, and I haven't had a chance to play any of them, which really saddens
me. Oh, my God.
I know.
I'm in that same boat.
You guys are killing me. It's kind of funny, though, because right now I'm making my way through Revelations.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a slow burn on that one.
I have Assassin's Creed 1 still in the wrapper with the Circuit City tag on it, which
Did you get it when it was like on sale during their huge closings?
I got it like when it first launched. It was a long story. I almost got in a fight with the guy at Circuit City, but that's another story. I have like BioShock 1 and 2 I haven't had a chance to play yet. You know, I played a little bit of them. I got the Star Wars game, but I heard it's just awful. So I haven't really played too much of that. I'll check it out. But it's kind of a gift and a curse. I have all these great games, but you know, I don't have a lot of time really to play a lot of them because things are crazy at work. And, you know, it's a ridiculous thing to complain about, but oh, well.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, like it seems like every week we talk about what we've been playing, and I'm always the one who's, doesn't have nearly as many games played as everybody else. We're adding Mike Bachman in right now, so he should be joining us in just a second. He actually gets to play games. Steven is usually the one who comes with a complete list of games, but, hey Mike,
can I help you?
Mike Bachman, ladies and gentlemen, host of Fistful of Pixels.
I remember that show. That was back when I had time to put it out.
Mike, we are joined by Brian McCleary from Ford. He's chatting up some wonderful what he's been playing, which is about the same that I've been playing every week, which is usually, you know my playlist.
You know what I've been playing, though, and I finally had a chance to jump in, is Arkham City, which I dig.
Okay. Nice.
It's kind of like I played Arkham Asylum a little bit, and I kind of stopped playing. But then I love Arkham City because it's got a lot of like beat 'em up to some extent to it. You know, it's still like a beat 'em up a little bit, but it has you know, some stealth aspects to it. It's still an open city, and like the upgrade system, I really think is slick. Like, I had what I like to call a video game blackout playing that game. You know, I unwrapped it, and it was like a Saturday afternoon, and the next thing I know, I'd been playing for 7.5 hours. And
oh my lord.
I just like stunk, and my wife came downstairs and was like, "Really? You've been playing for this long?" I was like, "What time is it?" She's like, "We got to get ready and go out." I was like, "Okay, all right."
You know,
but
it's
like I haven't had that happen in a while.
That happens to me sometimes, and I'll hop into what I've been playing right now because that just happened to me as well. And I got back into Fallout 3, and the reason being I got back into Fallout 3 is because I decided, you know what, instead of diving headlong into Skyrim, I really should kind of clear out a couple of these older RPGs, and so Fallout 3 was one of them that I really wanted to get through. And I think I was about 75% done, and or I was about 50% done, and then blacked out. I think it was Sunday night. We had gotten back from our cottage up north, and I sat down on the couch and started playing, thinking I'll play for an hour because Game of Thrones is coming on in about an hour and a half or 2 hours. And next thing I know, I look at the clock, and it's like 3:30 in the morning, and I'm thinking, what the hell just happened? And yeah, and I got quite a ways in, got totally sucked back into it. So I think I'm gonna be playing that. But the other thing I've been playing is I was kind of half joking around, but not really. I've been playing Deck Builder 2012 because that's what seems like what I've been building these last 2 weekends is a deck up at our cottage. But okay. What that's helped me realize is how much I owe handheld gaming for when I'm away from the house, because I've been handheld gaming like crazy. I chatted a little bit about this last week with the last podcast, maybe it was a couple weeks ago, but I've been playing that Skylanders Cloud Patrol a lot on the iOS, which is it's just a fun game, just kind of like Fruit Ninja with Skylanders and shooting stuff. So I like that quite a bit, but the games that I have been playing, and I'm running around here looking for my 3DS. Here it is. So Nintendo released the folders for the update. Which, you know, we got folders, guys. Huge news, which is it's always the way Nintendo does it. You get folders, and it's you know, press release. But it got me to reorganize my 3DS games, and I realized I had a ton of games that I forgot that I had downloaded or that I got for free. Zelda 2, Adventure of Link. I've been playing that like crazy. I played Zelda the Minish Cap. I've been Zeldaing out, really, I guess you could say.
Have you updated all those games for all the ones that have actual support now?
No. I didn't know that that was a possibility.
You have to go into your settings and download screen again, I think. After the initial download, a bunch of them, I think maybe three or four of them now have like actual save states and whatnot.
Oh, wow. Cool. Good.
I find myself playing like all those, you know, old games more on my 3DS than anything.
Yeah. You know, I'm totally it's funny because I've played a bajillion virtual console games on the Wii. I played a lot of, you know, download games, like classic games on the Xbox and the PSN and stuff, but having them on the 3DS, just having them portably like this, that's what I've been playing most of on this handheld, is just those classic games like Super Mario Land 2, never played it before.
Oh, amazing. That game's amazing.
Yeah, I never knew how good it was. Donkey Kong, the Donkey Kong game on the Game Boy.
Yeah.
I think it was, call it Donkey Kong 94.
Yeah.
Amazing game. And yeah. It's like, wow, I never knew this.
Are you talking about the one that's like the Mario versus Donkey Kong ones? The Donkey Kong for Game Boy. Is it the same style one?
You know what? It morphed into Mario versus Donkey. It was the Game Boy game.
Yeah. I've played that game for 20 years. Like, it's the only game I constantly play on my 3DS.
It's so good. And then I got into, which spurred me to get back into the eShop and start checking out some of their games. Mutant Muds. I think it's Mutant Muds Attack or Mutant Muds. Surprisingly, and I don't want to say surprisingly, really cool game. It's just a platformer, but you kind of shift in from a few different layers. So you start off in kind of the middle layer, the traditional platforming layer, but you can jump forward or into the background. And the effect is really good. The 3D effect for just being kind of almost like Paper Mario, really flat, works really well. So I just started downloading a bunch of games on the 3DS eShop, and I was really surprised to see that there are actually some pretty fun games in there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I've been playing, is just a lot of the handheld and portable games, obviously with, you know, traveling a lot and working late a lot, and that's kind of what you're stuck with sometimes. But, you know, it's not bad. I guess I'd almost much rather play these and enjoy it than, you know, only get a chance to play 15 minutes of Skyrim or Fallout. That's usually how my gaming sessions start these days. I'll be like, all right, I got 15 minutes to kill. Do I want to turn the Xbox on? Or do I want to just sit on the couch before the whatever show starts or whatever sporting event starts and just play 3DS or Vita? And that's basically what I've been doing. So, portable gaming right now. But I've blocked out the rest of May and all of June and all of July just to get through my backlog. So
isn't that sad? You have to block it off.
Yeah. But you know what? The only lucky thing we've had this year, I guess lucky, and for some people who have backlogs, is that there's like no real releases after Diablo 3 next week, really.
Except in the download space.
Yeah, Max Payne coming out though.
Yeah, Max Payne is coming out. Yep. And we got Game of Thrones, which looks, but we'll.
Which
see.
Is launching the same day as Diablo 3. Yeah, Max Payne.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did they always? Didn't it happen to Alan Wake like 2 years ago? They launched the same day as.
Yeah.
We were in that game, so it's a sore subject.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I remember.
The Think integration, that's right.
But that whole thing.
That's funny.
What I've been playing. What about you, Eric? What have you been playing?
The game I've played the most that was an actual console game is Pro Wrestling for the NES.
Old school. Nice.
Yeah, awesome.
Weren't you just giving me like a whole bunch of crap on Twitter for all the like 1 year old games I was playing and you're playing something on NES?
For that. Yeah.
Who's your wrestler? Who do you wrestle as?
Hayabusa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have to. I made it all the way to the VWA championship and I lost, but I played that about a dozen times in the last few days. It's so
Wasn't
much
there
fun.
A dude named Tan Man or something like that?
Yeah, there was that the blonde guy, right?
Yeah, the suplex, Hogan. Right?
Yeah, the suplex.
I don't, not Tan Man. I like Starman.
No, I'm Starman was the
internet
one.
Right now. To yeah, out what it was
somebody hop on Wikipedia? Yeah, yeah.
What was his name? Not Star. I like Starman a lot. King Slender.
That's who it was. Mine was the who was the Beast guy? The
Amazon.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay. Wikipedia is helping me. I can't take. I wish I was witty and knew the answers off the top of my head, but
yeah, the Amazon. Yeah, it was Fighter Hayabusa, Starman, Kin Korn Karn, Giant Panther, the Amazon, King Slender, and Great Puma.
It was pretty much, though, you were either going to do Starman, Hayabusa, or my case, I was King Slender all the time. But who else was those other guys?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody was Kin Korn Karn or Great Puma. You know, nobody cared about those. But, man, that was a great game. I'm thankful you brought that up because now I'm really interested. I'm going to have to run out to one of the second.
Pro wrestling is amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Look at the box art. The box art alone is just epic.
I just got another NES and a whole bunch of games about 2 weeks ago. Oh. And the other game I've been playing a bunch of is Bayou Billy.
Oh, that game was impossible.
Oh, it totally was, but I love it.
I had a top loader in the box, never
opened. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, this is one of those moments like you kick yourself growing up. Top loader in the box, unopened, which is worth a good amount of dough. So, like, I was in middle school. Somebody's grandma had it, and we bought it for like $5, and it had like Super Mario 3, never opened, all this stuff. And I gave it to my buddy, and I still kick myself to this day. I'm like, dude, that thing's worth a couple hundred bucks, and it's so rare, and he still has it. I'm like, you prick. I'm like, oh, but he opened it, of course. But
oh, my God.
I know. It's so funny. Like, everybody growing up, remember you heard about your parents and, oh, my baseball cards, right? I'm so bummed I got rid of my baseball cards. And I'm like, I'm bummed I got rid of my top loader Nintendo and my Castlevania Symphony of the Night that I sold for like $5 to GameStop back in the day, you know? So sad.
So, yeah, other than that, I don't know. I haven't had a lot of time for games.
To get into some of that classic stuff. God, wouldn't that be...
Oh, it's a whole other podcast. Yeah. Probably doing that right.
So, you know, I'm hoping the... Brian, I know you're going to E3. I'm at E3, and Mike and Eric are still trying to get to E3. Wouldn't it be awesome? We're sitting in the Nintendo press conference, and the lights dim, and all of a sudden it says, coming to Wii U, pro wrestling.
Oh, God.
Oh, dude, that would
be... And then Daily Woos.
That's, well, I remember...
I'd have no reaction, because I never played it.
Oh,
we did some stuff with... John Cena for work, and he actually had a t-shirt he made for like WWE that was like the pro wrestling box, but it was John Cena's picture on it. It was like 8-bitted out. I was like, oh, that's badass. I need one.
The only other thing I've been playing is reinstalling apps for my new phone. I picked up a Galaxy Nexus.
Ooh. Didn't you know that they just today announced the Galaxy 3?
It's not as good.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's the processor is a little bit funky and
Smaller
screen, less pixel density. Yeah, I was kind of on eye out for that, but I couldn't wait any longer when they dropped the price on this and had a discount on top of that. So whatever.
Cool. How about you, nice. Mr. Bachman? What was your
I don't even know where to start. I just built a new gaming rig, which actually isn't even completely together because a BIOS update bricked my motherboard. But I've been installing pretty much everything on my Steam's list and playing it just to kind of see how everything looks. I got stuck.
What are your specs?
I got a Sabertooth 990 FX motherboard, which... Don't really know what that means, but I bought it anyway. Got a 3.6 gigahertz quad core AMD chip, the FX 4100. Then I got a Asus Radeon 6850. I almost said 9850. I don't even think they make that.
You're killing me with that AMD.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people
are going to have a lot of fun getting some updates in there.
a lot of people are giving me flack for it, but I mean, honestly, I was working with a budget and
it's totally worth the price, but the only issues you're going to have are getting some updates. They're really bad, their support.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I haven't had too many issues with it so far, but I've been just kind of installing some things. I played Crysis for a little bit. But
until you realized it was still Crysis?
I like Crysis.
Oh, screw you. So how does Tribes look on that machine?
Tribes, actually, to tell you the truth, I still play Tribes on low. And the main reason for that is because, you know how when you get hit, like the screen kind of cracks and they do that little effect and like,
yeah,
you know, the colors get distorted
on low.
It doesn't do it as hard on low, and it doesn't.
I never thought about that.
That's the thing, is like a lot of games, like when I play competitive games, I usually play on low settings just because all those effects that they add over top are just distractions. Yeah. And I play a lot worse.
It doesn't really matter for Tribes because it's locked at 60 for the frame rate anyways. Right. So you're not going to get a whole lot of improvement there.
Yeah, no, it just kind of looks ugly when they do all that, and so I usually end up blowing myself up or completely missing people when I get hit. So I've been playing a lot of Just Cause 2, and that game's so fun. Oh my god, I'll be playing that forever.
That everybody keeps talking about the game that I never even had a chance to play it, but everybody that's played that was, you know, they kind of relate it to the same level as Saints Row the Third, where it's just fun, just kind of balls.
It's just
fun.
It's stupid fun.
Yeah. It's not quite as good at it though. There's a lot of repetitive stuff you have to do in Just Cause 2, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. It's a lot more freeform, I think than Saints Row 2 was. But there's, I mean, like just being able to be flying a jet like full speed. Fly up next to another plane, jump on top of the jet, and then jump to the other one, get inside that, fly it into a mountain, jump out and like skydive. And as long as you grapple hook the ground before you hit, you'll be fine. Even though arguably the grapple hook makes you hit the ground at a higher velocity.
Realistic, very realistic.
It just doesn't matter. Yeah. There's no realism in that game whatsoever.
I can't wait for Just Cause 3 this year's E3.
Yeah. Surprise. And so it's been pretty much that,
isn't that THQ?
No, Just Cause isn't THQ.
No.
I think it's Ubisoft, isn't it? Or
oh, it is Ubisoft, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it is possible that game could actually come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That and Amnesia, I think, is the only other thing that I've been playing, which
first tell me about Amnesia and then tell me about The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, I did play Walking Dead. I don't know. Amnesia's just scary. That's about all I got to say. It makes me want to cry. I've never played a game. Like, I only play it at night because that's the only way to play it, you know, with headphones and with the lights off and everything. And there's never, like, Amnesia's the only game that's ever, like, made me, like, immobile, like, unable to, like, press any buttons. Like, I see something that's just so unsettling that I have to, like... stop and get my bearings before I can continue. The atmosphere in that game is just unmatched. I played The Walking Dead, which was pretty good. I don't really know how much I can say about it without spoiling things, because a lot of what makes that game interesting is the story. Let's just say that, like, since I've played it, I've heard some things from other people who have made choices different than the ones that I made. And from what they've been telling me, it seems like things pretty much turn out the same regardless of the decisions that you make, which kind of disappoints me a little bit, because when I played through it, it seemed a lot like Mass Effect or one of those games where, like, all the intricate, like, little decisions that you're making are playing towards this broader scope. But from what I've been hearing, it seems like, you know, they're just kind of giving you the illusion of choice. And I have to play through it a second time for myself to really see if that's the case. But
so you mean in the end, it's more like Mass Effect than you thought?
Yeah, I don't say anything. I still haven't played Mass Effect 3. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like there's really only two points in the story where I could really tell that the uh, that it looked, you know, that the story was supposed to be splitting. And just, I've talked to other people who made the opposite choices from what I made in those 2 points. And from what it sounds like, they ended up in the same spot as I did anyway. So that's kind of,
that doesn't bother me a whole bunch. I mean, it's like Uncharted or something.
Well, you
know,
it's
the illusion of choice matters.
Because these are like huge decisions, like without saying too much, they're like life or death decisions. It's like deciding who lives or who dies. And when the story is going to continue through 5 different episodes and those characters are supposed to continue along with you, you know, it makes it seem like it's going to be a much bigger deal than it actually is.
Well, you figure that it's got to space apart and then come back together to form a coherent story. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't be able to make each episode start from every single variable that a player chose.
You're only talking about like a 10-hour experience. It wouldn't be that hard for them to have some significant branches that take place over 10 hours.
Yeah.
And it give the, I mean, honestly, one of the big things that adventure games lack for me anyway is replayability. You know, if up until now, they're pretty much just, you know, they're puzzles, like figure out how to use the rope with the baby doll and like lure the guy out of the box or whatever. Like, but once you figure that out, once you've already done that, then there's no reason to go back and play it again, because you just know what the solutions are. And like, yeah, the dialogue's cool, but it's no different than watching a movie for a second time. You already know what everybody's going to say.
Yeah.
But if there's decisions and the story actually branches, there's a reason for me to want to go back and play through it a second time. And that's kind of what I was hoping for with The Walking Dead. And it still might be that way. I don't know for sure, because I have to play through it a different, you know, a second time and play through it differently. But it doesn't sound like that's how it works out.
They're really making a big deal about the Walking Dead game in that it seems like, for a couple of reasons. One, it's everything I've been hearing about it says it's actually written better than the TV show. And Robert
Kirkman, the TV show?
Yeah, that the game is written better than the TV show.
Yeah, absolutely.
which is great. It does kind of has a couple crossover areas which we won't mention, but there's a couple parts I guess that crossover. And the other thing I've been reading about is that or hearing about is that it seems like Telltale. You mentioned in your review, this is definitely Telltale's sort of return to form in that genre of what made them, you know, what made them so good. But from what it sounds like, it seems like they've nailed the episodic design of this. I mean, obviously Sam and Max and some of those other games were the start, but it seems like they've actually kind of figured out how to make an episodic television show with The Walking Dead, you know,
right.
This property and have it really work well to the point where it's not just, you know, in Sam and Max games, it was, hey, one episode you're in space, the next one you're in hell, the next one you're here. These actually kind of, you know, the choices may not seem to have effect right now, but you never know. They might have effect later.
Exactly.
Yeah. The series.
I think I said that in my review mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell exactly how much impact they're going to have until we're 2 or 3 episodes in, and you can kind of see the effects of the decisions that you've made.
Yeah, it's like they're not even done with episode 2 yet. Like they're finalizing that game right now.
Right. And I'm sure it's all written.
Yeah.
They were finishing character dialogue. It was going to Gary Whitta, who's story consultant, like last week.
I heard something a little different, but you know, I guess we'll find out as soon as they announce when the actual next.
Oh well, you know it's going to be next month, this month.
Are they doing it monthly now? Was that?
Oh no, it always is. That's their style.
Okay.
Did you guys read the comic books?
Yeah. I'm a huge
geek for them.
I've read the first compendium.
I'm bummed how the TV series has been. You know, I think everybody is, but
yeah.
I liked it early on. It started off great. The first like 2-3 episodes were excellent. I mean, but this is coming from somebody who didn't actually read the comics. But I mean, later on, there was just so much dialogue. I don't really need this.
I think that was the kind of the general assessment, and it didn't really get great again until like the last 2 episodes of the of this last season. But you know, it gives something to look forward to, and hopefully the game will satisfy people and get people interested in the, you know, or to stay interested in the property until the next season comes out. So
right, right,
very cool. So is that all you've been
all you've been playing?
All that's worth talking about. I mean, okay. I like I said, I hopped through a lot of games, but nothing notable.
Cool. Well, let's go on ahead and hop into some of the news, which is, our wonderful friend Eric kind of manages this portion of the show. Eric, what do we have on tap for news?
Do we want to talk about some Call of Duty?
Yeah, we can talk about some Call of Duty.
So Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2, big surprise, right?
Yeah, it was completely surprising. Nobody expected it since last May.
Right.
But I guess like the surprising thing is that they're actually trying to change up the game some.
Can you tell us what a couple of those, at least some of the changes that we know about, if there's anything that comes off,
Actually looking to pull up a list right now.
Well, one thing you guys mentioned earlier was the, Brian and Eric was this, you guys, like me, you guys are kind of fans of the single player. You guys probably both go through the single player first, right? And then go.
Absolutely.
Out.
Yeah. Mike, I go back and forth, I'll start single player for a little bit, then I'll jump into multiplayer and then jump back in again.
Mike, do you play Call of Duty games?
I'm probably not the best person to ask because I do. Like, I'll play them for a little bit, and then I can only take so much of pretty much the same thing.
Sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, even me, I love the games, but they've been a lot of the same thing for the last 4 years.
So and as far as competitive shooters go, I don't tend to favor ones like, and this is there, it's completely valid. It's not anything wrong with the game, but I don't tend to favor ones where I can get it shot a couple of times and be dead. I'm usually the more like Unreal Tournament, like that style shooter where, it takes like a few rocket shots to kill somebody.
So one thing that they've done with what it seems like they've done with this latest iteration is really kind of put some of the focus back on single player. With almost like a branching path or branching mission single player campaign. Is that a fair assessment, Eric?
Yeah, most of my I only watched a trailer. I don't know if there any other videos beyond that that have come out? Just the launch or the release trailer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, has there been any other videos?
No, there have been.
Okay.
No. Sorry, sure. Again, I had peanut butter in my mouth again.
Why not? Peanut butter. Sure. Peanut butter. That's what we'll call it.
Continue.
Wow.
Awkward.
It's so not awkward for me, Dolly.
Two single player. Do you
think Activision's becoming like a one-trick pony, though, a little bit?
How so?
I mean, pretty much only big things that they're putting out now, it's whether it's like a Spider-Man game or like some movie title. The only thing you can really count on from them that's gonna, in my opinion, that's going to come out that's going to be good-ish is Call of Duty.
So they have become a sequel house.
Yeah. It's just like Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. You don't see any new IP really coming out. I mean, you do, but it's pretty much let's just keep going with what we know is going to work. But I feel it's pretty much just every year Activision is just banking solely on Call of Duty, and that's really the only big news I hear from that studio or that publisher at all.
I don't know if you can really count. I mean, I know like Blizzard's technically in that same house, but I mean, you can't really count them because they're kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone can make jokes about how Activision kills their games and everything, but
they still sell a buttload.
Yeah, they make money until a game doesn't make money anymore. Then they ditch it. They find something else that'll make money.
Well, I saw your guys' tweet about how it was more pre-sold than Modern Warfare 3 was. I mean, my thought is that I don't think it's going to sell better than Modern Warfare 3. I think people are getting a little tired with the series. Just like if you just look even at somewhat of the momentum that Battlefield had coming out in the fall. I mean, I didn't think it was going to sell more than Modern Warfare, but I think people are somewhat getting tired of the Call of Duty series overall. I mean, yeah, I'll still buy it, but. I'm not like gung ho about it.
I think what's happening, and this will directly tie into the news story. The new console turnover is happening at the exact right time for Activision because now they can. They're probably already working on the actual next gen Call of Duty game, whatever that is, or Modern Warfare 4.
Well, the next one will undoubtedly be PS3, Xbox 360, and next-gen systems.
Right, but at the same time, those are going to be system sellers. You know, they're going to get people to switch over to new consoles and as much as first-party titles. But, I mean, Call of Duty is a huge franchise still, and it will be for a while at least. But, you know, Brian's exactly right. People are getting burnt out. We won't see numbers. I mean, Black Ops 2 is still the highest selling Call of Duty game, or Black Ops 1, it's still sold more than Modern Warfare 3 up to this point. So
it's been out longer, though, too.
Well, it's been out longer, but I think, relatively speaking, for that time frame, Black Ops sold more copies in the first 6-7 months.
The margin's low, but yeah. But I think that is another. People see that, and I think it's going to lead to more Black Ops 2 sales.
Yeah, yeah.
Funnily enough,
It's going to sell more? You think it'll break more records? Because it seems like every Call of Duty that comes out, it's like, God, another record was broken.
Yeah. I think
I use those
really
slides
close.
In presentations, but
I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Who knows how much higher it can go? I mean, you know, really the only what buyer is left that hasn't doesn't pick up? Maybe the Wii buyer. I don't know.
If we're talking about the day one sales, the people that are left are all of the people who just didn't buy it day one the year before.
Yeah.
Because when I say, like, there's people who buy it year round, and if they really like it, they'll buy the next one as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm. Because all their friends are buying it. It's like Madden. All their friends are buying it. Everybody's playing it.
Yeah. That's how the day one sales are always so big, even when, you know, the trend's up and down, you know, even out the game. Mm-hmm. But
it's a cultural event, you know, it's like people, it's just like, it's become just like Madden where people, you know, you start seeing people camping out for it and you start seeing all of the hype coming around it. And, you know, I don't argue it's success and I think it will sell a good amount, but I think at the end of the day, it'll be like the mom going into Best Buy and saying, I need to buy my kid something for Christmas or whatever. I need to buy my kid a game. And they're going to see, ooh, Call of Duty. I've heard of this. They'll pick that. Mm-hmm. Versus like, and that's, you know, that's what I thought when Battlefield was coming out saying we're going to outsell, you know, Call of Duty. I was like, no, you don't have the name recognition with the people who don't play games as much. Yeah. Like, I think a lot of your hardcore first person shooter people were like, ooh, you know, Battlefield looks pretty badass for what they're doing. And I walked away from E3 last year saying, oh, this title is going to be badass. But, you know, at the end of the day, it still didn't have that name recognition.
E3 is a tank demo?
Yeah, but I mean, you could play.
Turned off of that.
They had behind doors stuff that you could actually play the game. Like you had to wait in a 2-hour line to get to it. But you know, I kind of bribed my EA rep to give me one of the advantages of my job. But, you know, I walked away from that saying, I can't wait for this game to come out. And I actually took the day off when that game came out, but their servers were down, you know, when the game
was. Oh my God, that was the worst.
Oh, that was
let's get back
Brian
to this
Wayne,
Call of
Duty.
Brian,
aren't you into work today? Oh, there's a lot of traffic.
No, everybody knew. Man. I said, I'm taking the day off to play this game. I'm like, I got to take off today.
Okay, so Black Ops 2. Yes, it'll have branching plot points. It's going to be split between 2025 and the 80s.
That's kind of interesting that they're doing it that way. But continue.
You're in 2025, you're going to find Frank Woods, who is in the original Black Ops. So, and I guess in the 80s, you're going to be playing as him. And Alex Mason, the main character in Black Ops, will be one of your wingmen.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And I guess there's going to be some minor squad tactics to be used with, you know, like mechs and whatnot.
Yeah, there's mechs in this game. That's badass. I love mechs.
And I guess this is all over the impending fight with China we're going to have over rare earth elements. This game's, you know, kind of tied to reality in that sense.
So they are definitely doing an interesting job, and by they I mean Treyarch, in distancing themselves from what Infinity Ward are doing, to the point where Treyarch is... To me, Treyarch seems really adventurous when it comes to their versions of Call of Duty, right? They're the ones that handle all the ports to the Wii and DS and you know, PS2 and all that kind of stuff. And they're also the ones that now have had games in three completely different eras in succession. They had World War II when they had World at War. They had Black Ops, which kind of took place, you know, in the 60s and 70s, that kind of stuff. And then... Now they have a game which takes place across two time frames, 40 years apart, in the 80s and in 2025. And they're really also really pushing single player and multiplayer, a lot of new advances that are not found in any of the other Call of Duty games. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is because I'm tending to think that Activision is now going to start pushing Treyarch as the Call of Duty developer.
Well, Activision never points out there's a difference.
Yeah.
After the big changeover, they didn't want anybody to know that this Infinity Ward was a different Infinity Ward. But like, they've clearly given Treyarch the openness and freedom that they need to actually make a game for once.
Yeah, because they were definitely the B team up until now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And scores for Black Ops, the original, are still, I think they're only second to Call of Duty 4, right? The first Modern Warfare. So
yeah, which is the only one that really matters.
What's next on the news? Actually, you know what? So this is going to tie in directly into the next news bite, which is THQ related. You want to mention that, Eric?
THQ won't have a booth at E3?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I don't have like our news open or anything.
Oh, sorry.
So THQ won't have a booth at E3. A booth runs you quite a bit there.
They said some of the larger booths can run around $1 million.
Yeah.
Is side questing going to have a booth?
Side questing is going to have
a booth. We have a double size.
Ours is called a stall. Well, Brian, I mean, coming from the automotive industry, you obviously know that these booths take a lot of preparation, a lot of manpower, a lot of money to make an impression. And in this case, E3 is an industry only event. So there's no public attending. The effort is, while there's still a lot of effort to kind of, schmooze the press and the media and buyers and so forth, it's not really going to wow them as much as, say, some of the things in other shows. You've seen it firsthand. You guys last year, Ford had it was the Fiesta you guys had out in the hallway, right?
Yeah, it was a social club, and mm-hmm. That was a small booth, and I mean, that was a lot of work, that was our first, and I'll talk about it later on when we get into our stuff, but it's a lot of work and a lot of time and planning and everything like that. I've talked to a few of my friends and contacts at like Microsoft, mm-hmm. and they start planning for E3 pretty much like 2 to 3 months after it ends again, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's, if you go back, it's the same booth pretty much over and over again, same setup, but the planning, it blows my mind, some of those booths, the way they have like, separate air conditioning systems in some of them for the meeting rooms and all that stuff.
Which are so necessary.
Oh, it gets so hot there. And you're still sweating terribly. But, it's a bummer, I think, that THQ isn't going to be there again. But, especially after Saints Row, what they did last year, it was, such a big presence. And, it was a great title. And I think they really blew it out. But, where's their money best spent? And like you said, it's pretty much a industry-only event. And some publishers too don't have booths there. They might, my guess would be THQ might have a couple of small meeting rooms and they'll have, people come in. But, last year at E3, Activision had a booth, but there was nothing there. It was just a bunch of video screens.
Well, yeah, last year they had a booth and it was just a bunch of video screens. You didn't really get a lot of hands-on time unless they had a little back area where you could go in and but they were all, again, they were just set up in small meeting rooms back there. And the reason I said that this kind of ties into what Activision does is that 2 years ago, Activision didn't have a booth.
Yeah, at they had a party.
And 3 years before. 3 years
exactly,
ago.
The two years before, essentially the last 3 years, yeah. The 2 years prior to last, they just had meeting rooms up in, which is exactly what THQ is doing, meeting rooms up in the, up in the second floor in the meeting
area.
But they decided, we're going to keep our money small. Again, they threw a huge party.
This normally wouldn't be any kind of a deal, but it's just even more to the point that THQ is like, they're selling everything they can. Like, they're not in good shape, to put it lightly.
And what do they have coming out this year? I mean, they have Darksiders 2. Probably another UFC.
Which got pushed.
Probably another WWE game.
Yeah,
right?
WWE and UFC.
WWE for sure. Yeah. That Insane got pushed, or didn't get pushed, but that's not coming out until 2013. Saints Row 4, at least 2013. If that's still going to happen. you know, they don't have an income and they are clearly very bad at spending money. So who knows what they're going to do?
I just think it's a bummer. I mean, when was it Homeland or Homefront? When that came out, I was really looking forward to that game coming out, like coming out of E3. That was, I think, my first E3 I went to, and they started showing that, and I was really getting geeked for it. And I saw it all come out, and they said had such high hopes for it. And, you know, it sold okay, but not well enough to really turn that company around.
No, I think they ended up a net positive on with that game.
But not enough to really turn things around.
With how much money they spent on marketing,
like
$30 million or $40 million on marketing, you know, it's kind of hard to turn profit after that.
Those damn marketing guys, I'll tell you.
Next time I see one, I'm going to.
Hey, if you ever talk to one, try and figure out where he lives.
So we talked about one big giant game release in Call of Duty. There's we've just been told of another game being released in a kind of a different space. It's something that another one that was rumored, but we never got some solid details. Eric, what would that be?
Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
Woo.
So let me do a quick little round table. Raise your hand if you've completed Skyrim.
I just bought it like a week ago.
Can you guys see my hand?
My hands are down.
That's your penis.
Mike, did you complete Skyrim?
I played Skyrim till my eyes bled.
So you didn't complete it yet?
Yes. I did. I think if you're talking about all the side quests, I think I have one chain that I haven't finished, and that's it.
You know, it's so you're the one who... This is really...
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail your point.
No, you're kind of the one who this game potentially could be aimed for. Does this excite you?
No.
Wow.
Well, because I don't think that Elder Scrolls games are really tailored for a multiplayer experience, at least not a MMO experience.
It should have been co-op.
I think maybe like one or two players would be excellent, but like, the thing that makes Elder Scrolls games so good is how freeform they are, but you've got to put so many restrictions in order to make a game like viable and fair for all the players in an MMO that I just don't mm-hmm. think you can make it work well.
You know, I actually would have thought opposite. I would have thought you would have been super excited about this game.
Well, I like Morrowind and, you know, the games before that. I didn't really love Oblivion, but it's just the combat and the stylings. Like, it's already an MMO. Like, but that's not the best part. The best part of the game is you alone in a world and, you know, just do what you want. I don't want to be in a load with Smoke Dog 420 XXX, like, have him running around.
Yeah, XX Master Chief.
Yes, or something.
Right. But it's like I do think that it would be a decent multiplayer experience in a controlled environment, playing it with like one or two of your friends.
They announced that it was going to be, you know, you'll be able to set up like small parties, right? I mean, I think that was part of the shtick to having an online Elder Scrolls game. I mean, obviously, the character creation is huge. It's there. It's something that people already already know about, but
I guess it comes down to like what it's going to be on an individual basis. Like, what is what made the Elder Scrolls game so good for you personally? For me, it was the persistence of the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was being able to like, you know, to do something like to kill somebody and then they're gone forever, or to like to, you know, to drop a wooden spoon on a beach somewhere. And then like, if I come back, you know, 80 hours of gameplay later, that spoon's still sitting there. You know what I mean? But like, you can't really do that in an MMO. Otherwise,
unless
you just have piles
all the
hells. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's going to have to be highly instanced. Like, you know, you're not going to be able to, like, you know, walk over a hill without being in a separate instance.
Yeah, and if they do that, why make it an MMO?
Why make it an MMO? Yeah, exactly.
you know, whatever. I guess I'm not the target audience.
I'm willing to say that they probably know what they're doing, and if it doesn't work, they'll probably cancel it. Lena, but like,
well, I don't think at this point they can cancel it, because
all they've done is
I've been hearing rumors about this game being in production for like 3 years.
Right, right.
This is like just like the Old Republic before it got, you know, announced, quote unquote.
They should have canceled the Old Republic.
Well, and so here's what I think. I think out of all the properties out there that try to make the jump to MMO to take on, because they really are all directly competing with Warcraft, this might be the first one I think that really has a chance. I mean, everybody talked about, oh, Star Wars is going to do it. Well, guess what? Star Wars isn't doing it. You know?
Star Wars, the only reason that didn't do it is because like the story and like all the dialogue and everything was really cool, but at the core, the gameplay was exactly the same as WoW. Like, it was almost ripped directly from it, and it's like,
So if you get the gameplay of Elder Scrolls games, like let's say you get Skyrim style gameplay in an MMO, which I think could very well work. I think
it's already pretty much an MMO style combat.
I think it's a natural segue onto that, onto becoming an online game, because again, you know, you've already got the background, a digital background of these worlds created. I mean, that's how Warcraft started. World of Warcraft started. It was already lore created within the gaming world, right?
So while you're right, there's no real persistent like fiction behind all of the Elder Scrolls games. They all feel very disjointed.
They
take place in their own. I mean, each one takes place in almost a separate country, so to speak.
Yeah, and they're always at, you know, 1,000 years apart and that kind of stuff.
Right, exactly.
But this is the one that's going to kind of unite all those. But I really think that this is going to be, I think this is going to be really popular. I don't think anything will ever get to the height of what World of Warcraft was at the time,
except for Titan, and
that could very well, you never know, the next MMO from Blizzard, but awesome. You know, obviously there are MMO style games that are vastly larger than World of Warcraft, like things like Farmville, things, you know, that are I call them MMO because they are persistent worlds. They're massively multiplayer online games.
Elder Scrolls 4, Farmville.
Elder Scrollsville, Skyrimville. But I think that, this one has a shot. I think they're scrappy underdog. No,
I think it'll sell well, but I think the beyond 90-day retention is going to be very low. I don't think it'll hold players.
Like I said, I mean, I think that they know. I think that they know what they're doing. They've kind of proven that, you know, with Skyrim, and it's like, so I've got a certain element of faith, but my instinct is that it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, I've been proven wrong more times than I'll ever admit. So
all week long,
yeah, all day,
all day. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see how this game pans out. We know very little about it. We won't know until...
I just another fantasy MMO. Like,
that's true. It is another fantasy MMO. I do like how they've kind of aped the Game of Thrones ring, the Game of Thrones design for this little logo here. By the way, as a little aside, I really think the popularity of Game of Thrones and some of this fantasy television had an impact on Skyrim and helping get new people interested in it, because it had dragons, it has that kind of genre. So who knows? Maybe this could continue to capitalize on that. Eric, any more news, or are we good to go for the rest of the?
I'm kind of checking through here, and you know, Ooh Boy, Company of Heroes 2. There's not a lot going on right now.
Sure. It was kind
E3,
of
E3 is a month away. That's what's going on.
Yeah. The judges are start. I think the judges meet in 2 weeks to take a look at the.
It's the following Monday.
Yeah. Exactly. So we'll see what starts to come out of there. There's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors, and a lot of meetings taking place where they're actually showing some journalist things that are coming at E3. So it's going to be real interesting to see what this next month news wise is. Typically slow, But we'll see. There,
the leaks about E3 haven't been as bad yet.
No,
really,
they haven't. They haven't. Although there's there was a leak today on I want to say it was IGN or Game Informer. I think it was Game Informer.
IGN about the Xbox 360.
Oh, that $99.
Or the next Xbox.
So there's two things we can definitely talk about. We have the $99 Xbox 360, which is rumored to be coming next week, I guess, potentially announcing it. Do you want to
subsidized?
Yeah. So, Eric, what's this?
Reportedly, there's a subsidized Xbox 360 that comes with a Kinect, 2 years of Live, two controllers. It's basically like a core Xbox 360 gaming set of what you would need to start playing. But the thing is, it's $100 subsidized like a phone contract for 2 years. And the total price is going to end up being $460 if you hold all the way through. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's that.
It's the kind of subsidization I think it's on the right track.
Because it just sounds like Rent-A-Center to me.
think of it this way. It's how you have cable at your house. Chances are you have a Comcast box or an AT&T box or something. You have a cell phone that's already subsidized. So I don't think it's uncommon. I actually think it's probably going to be very common when the next generation of consoles start to arrive. You're going to see that as an option. It's going to be really good for people, especially if these are sold through more than just the Microsoft store. If they're sold through like Comcast or whatever, I think that's a pretty smart idea.
Yeah, I think they mentioned something about additional video services coming with this bundle.
Remember that Microsoft is rebranding their Zune service, and they're going to make the push for, I think they're calling it Woodstock, their music and media service. So
yeah,
I wasn't too surprised by the move, though, to be honest with you, because Xbox is pushing that console more as a content distribution machine, and I agree to that, and that's how I really work and selling programs in on Xbox. I mean, they're now touting that, 60 to 70% of the time on the console is spent, viewing content, not playing games. So
I would do that too. The only thing that stops me is I have a PC connect to TV, but otherwise 360 is a great, media hub.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes forward and pricing wise, how people react. I mean, some folks already think that with Xbox Live jumping up to $60 a year, that's a huge cost.
Well, it was a couple years ago now.
Yeah, but
one gig hard drive is going to fill up quick, though.
It is, especially with everything going download. So it's going to be interesting to see what how this all works out. I think it's the right move for gaming companies to be doing this, because it's going to get a lot of people interested. I think the price is a little off. I think $99 for that. I'd actually would have thought $50, $49.99, or if it's $99,
do it free.
Do it free.
Make cash off it.
That's true.
It's like on Live. Just get those consoles out there.
Yeah.
As best as you can.
Get those consoles out there. If you said $15 a month for 2 years, I'd do it.
There's
an early termination fee. There it also sets them up. One of the rumors was that they're going to announce it tomorrow or next week for it's a 2 year lease on on an Xbox 360.
Now you're talking my game.
It's a 2 year lease on an Xbox 360. Perfect timing to bring the next Xbox out right when they announce it. So
yeah.
What was the other news about Xbox?
Okay, you guys remember the U.S. Saturn launch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, we got the Saturn coming out. Was it supposed to be September 2nd, a Saturday for Saturn Day? And they get to E3 and they say, oh, hey, guess what? The Saturn is out.
Oh, that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Go to KB Toys. It's already out
there. KB Toys. Listen to that. Upstairs 12 Oaks Mall back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So anyways, there's a rumor here at IGN, which I'm highly skeptical of, but whatever, it's a rumor. Apparently Flextronics is ramping up production for the next Xbox.
Wow.
And when I hear ramping up, and with the last story we just talked about, maybe they're just ramping up production on the subsidized 360.
And it could be a new model of the current 360 that takes advantage of
smaller form factor in an Apple TV sense.
Yep. I think, and that was a rumor that was out about just a couple weeks ago. Somebody had said, hey, there's a new smaller Xbox 360 coming.
Yeah.
That could be a budget 360.
Yeah, because I think the rumor was right. It didn't have as strong of a graphics chip and some other stuff like that, right?
It was so they could play just arcade games.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah.
But this rumor, I don't trust it at all.
Well, they keep saying no new Xbox this year, no new Xbox this year. You know?
No even talk about it. So like if they're ramping up production now, that means they would have a September launch or so, September to October.
Yeah.
Think of it this way. If they're launching remember 2 years ago at E3, they announced the now black Xbox. They said, hey, guys.
And it was available in a month.
It was
available right away.
And they had started ramping up production right around this time.
It was quite a while beforehand. But
you guys
had shortage
that
of those.
Event? Was no. anybody at that event? I was there and you got one.
Yeah.
And I couldn't take it. It was the worst part about it.
So,
you know, all these puzzle pieces really lead me to believe that this next Xbox that's coming potentially next week or being announced next week or being announced at E3, because again, E3, Microsoft just didn't they announce that their E3, that like the whole push is going to be. Like media entertainment. Media.
Yeah. Like the name of it is something.
I really think all of this comes together for that purpose. There's going to be an Xbox Kinect version. That's going to be a budget version, $99 a year. You get the entire entertainment value. It's actually very smart for Microsoft. Now, if all of this is lining up correctly, you know, it kind of seems like these big puzzle pieces are falling into place.
Yeah. I think they're going to announce the next Xbox, not at E3. I think they're going to do something different.
Maybe have their own event.
Or like a Gamescom or something, you know?
I don't know if they could pull that off. I mean, people are kind of down on Gamescom after like...
Or some other event. Yeah, right? Remember when PlayStation showed the Move? What was that at GDC? Yep. They really showed that off? Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to announce something maybe in the fall or something like that and start ramping people up so it's a year in advance. Then at E3 next year they say, hey, we showed you this in the fall. I mean, this is, I have no verification or anything on this, but they then say, hey, we showed you this last fall, and then at E3 in June of next year, which I can't believe we're already talking about it, they'll say, hey, you know, and then here's gonna be the launch lineup, here's when it's coming out, here are all the great titles you can play at the show this year, go. If I worked at Xbox, that's what I would do.
Nintendo did it with the Wii. I mean, they announced it as the revolution back then.
They just did it with the Wii U.
Yeah, well, they said, think of it this way. They did it, here's the revolution. By the way, this is just a console. This all you see is all it looks like. And then at Tokyo Game Show,
they unleashed the controllers.
They unleashed the controller and said, these are the controllers.
You remember seeing that the first time? I was like, what the fuck is this thing?
Everybody was kind of, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, but then you didn't care as much because, like, a month later, the PS3 let out the boomerang controller, and everyone laughed at that.
Everyone's like, okay, we'll go back to this Wii controller, guys. That's a little crazy. Bannering. But,
wasn't that crazy when that all started? What was that, 2005?
Yeah.
2004?
2005. It was, 2004 we started hearing rumblings.
Yeah, but 2005 is when it all went down.
Yeah, all 2005, all three console manufacturers showed off there. Wouldn't it be E3 is a month? Is E3 is it's less than a month away?
The 5th. It's about a month away.
Yeah. Brian, what day are you getting out there when you go out to
E3? I'm a huge E3 geek, cool. So I am. I think I'm actually flying out like that Saturday.
Before, okay, cool.
And then I think we have some stuff we're working on that Sunday. Then. The press events all start Monday, Tuesday. We hit the ground running.
Yeah, I'm looking at flights right now, and we're not sponsored by Spirit Airlines, so I can bash them all I want. You know, I don't like taking Spirit because they keep jacking up their prices on everything. Now carry-ons are $35.
Cancel your flight out of nowhere.
Yeah, cancel. Now carry-ons are $35.
What's with their baggage fees? Like $100?
Well, no. What's that? What happened?
It's going to be $100. So let's say you go to the airport, right? Uh-huh. And you say like, okay, you probably won't do this because you probably plan. But like, mm-hmm. let's say I want to book a flight all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I go to the airport. And you don't pre-book anything online. If you pre-book stuff online, it's still a little bit more. But if you walk to the gate and say, oh, I want to carry this on, they say, that's $100.
Wow.
I mean, how to ruin a business 101.
Dude, they're going to go under in like a year.
Well, the thing is with them, and I'm not going to go on a tirade because it's not worth it. Think about it. They show, okay, we're going to give you a flight for $9. Oh, great. That's a great deal. But then you have taxes. Then if you want to pick what seat you sit in, that's another fee. If you want to bring on a bag, that's another free fee. If you want something to drink, that costs money. You know, it's like, when are they going to start charging to use the bathroom is the big joke.
That's probably coming. There'll be tokens that you're going to need to buy. You need to buy the tokens in tens. Yeah.
Major magic, actually.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It's you know, E3 now that we're starting to hear more and more, it's going to be really interesting. And every year we keep saying it every year. It's going to be really interesting this year.
This is either going to be
it could be a
one of the best or the worst.
Yeah,
E3. I agree. I think next year is going to be the really, really big one. And I said that last year. I said, 2012 is going to be the big E3. And coming. I think it'll be 2013 will be the – I mean, even if E3 is still the same.
Right. Yep. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. We've had a lot of big news just in the last few days breaking. So it's all leading right now. It's just a big funnel cloud towards
E3. The rumor mill is going to start going nuts in the next few weeks too. You're going to see stuff leaking out left and right. Like the Rayman stuff leaked out early.
Yeah, which looked badass, by the way.
Looked cool.
Oh, I'm a huge Rayman fan, and that Wii U capability may have decided which version I'm buying.
Did you play it last year? Did you play the E3? Did you play the Wii U at E3 last
year? Yeah. Eric and I, it's a funny story. Well, let me just reiterate the story of how we got to play the E3, and it was.
I got a good one of myself too. I got a good one too. So
this is the biggest boner move in the history. So, I decide that last day I didn't get a chance to play the Wii U. I'm like, you know, I'm gonna save it for that last day. All my meetings were the first 2 days, and I only had one meeting that third day. And Eric and Ryan were kind of handling the other meetings, and we actually had like 7 people that were there, which was bizarre. So they were kind of handling a lot of the other meetings. So I got there. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna show up there because Nintendo was kind of being boneheads about some of the press stuff. So I'm like, I'm gonna get there real early on that day, and I'm gonna have to wait in line because they weren't letting press cut. So got in line, and I waited like 2.5, maybe 3 hours.
Oh.
And there's 10 minutes left before I'm going around that final zigzag. I think there's one line left, and I'm excited. And out of nowhere, who shows up and just takes apart the divider and steps in next to me, Eric, in front of people who have been waiting 3 hours.
Oh, you almost got stoned, didn't you?
The dirtiest looks I've ever seen out of any you know nerds.
Wow,
these guys just all pissed off.
I'm gonna wait in line for 3 hours. You kidding?
That's right. You're gonna use me.
The best part about my E3 last year is, you know, we had an exhibit there, sure. So I had an exhibitor badge, and so that let me get in early. You know, so I could walk into the show whenever I wanted, as long as the doors were open. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got in like that Sunday, and I went and got my exhibitor badge, and I was like, I'm gonna do some sleuthing. You know, like I'm gonna see what the name of this new Nintendo console is. I'm gonna see what everybody has set up, and like I'm gonna figure out what the story is right before.
Sure.
So I walked in that Sunday, and like they're still putting everything together. They're still putting everything together in those booths, like right before the show opens. So I had that exhibitor badge, and I walked in. I think it was like that Tuesday or Wednesday morning. The Wednesday morning, because Tuesday was the E3, the Nintendo event.
Yeah, yeah.
And I walked in, and they're like, "Excuse me," and I showed my badge. This is such a tool move, but I wanted to do it. So I'm like, "Oh, I'm an exhibitor. I need to go check something in our booth." So I walk in. And I'm hovering around the Nintendo booth, and they're not letting anybody in. I say, oh, I'm sorry. I just want to see something, you know, real quick. So I wait, and they let me in, and I have to go back out again. And right as the doors open, I swoop right in, and I got to jump in and play the Wii U. But I still had to wait like 20 minutes to actually play it. But I thought it was okay. I mean, it was still real early, and it was a lot of tech demo-y stuff. But, you know, it was. I really played my like Ford cards when I was at E3 last year. I'm like, oh, it's crazy. I need to skip in front of these lines.
You know, that does work. Trust me.
You got to play them, man. If you can, you have to. Do it.
I might have to borrow your Ford badge at some point.
This yeah.
But you know, I think Eric and I both had the same. I think a lot of people had the same reaction, which is like, wow, you know, this is really early.
Yeah, this is a really cool bunch of tech demos.
Yeah, and
it was Wii games.
It was straight up the Wii games. Yeah. The visuals weren't any better.
They
weren't noticeably better because they were still using that kind of family happy the Wii design.
Except
stuff.
For the Zelda.
Yeah, that was.
Well, that was just a video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, that was an in-engine rendered scene.
You can move the camera around.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely you know. It was odd to see. So I'm really excited. I mean, I've heard a lot of things about how the actual Wii U lineup is going to surprise some people. There's been some rumors over the last week or two that publishers purposely are being told to hold back on the lineup. We'll find out more information at E3, blah, blah. But supposedly pretty heavy-duty lineup with
Mario game, supposedly, at launch.
Yeah, at the same time, and we talked about this last week, they announced a Mario game for the 3DS, which is exactly what they're going to be having on the Wii U. It's the same type of game. It's a side-scrolling Mario game. So there might be there's a rumor that there might be some interoperability between the two, which could be kind of cool. I mean, I could see myself using my 3DS Mario to play the Wii U version. But we'll see. You know, we'll get into the Wii U rumors and all that fun stuff in a future episode here. We got a month left, and basically these next 3 weeks of side questing podcasts.
I'm
going to
start my wants and predictions early.
Oh, that's okay.
I just want more information about Super Smash Brothers.
Oh,
seriously.
I got them on my site. I put mine up a while ago. That's nice.
We'll link to it for sure in these show notes. All right, well, let's move on to, speaking of you, let's move on to talking about you. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, what you do at Ford, and then we'll dive into what Ford and kind of the automotive industry in general are doing in the game space and how that's all this weird gelatinous mass that's starting to form.
That's a great description, a gelatinous mass. I don't know how I can fill that one in. But so just a little bit about me first. I graduated from Western Michigan in 2004 with a degree in advertising and promotions.
That's the Broncos, right?
Yeah, all Bronco right. Pride. Went to school for an advertising degree. I went to the agency side for a few years. And then 4 years into working, I realized, like, I love games and I want to figure out how I can do this for a career. And I was working in an agency called Campbell Ewald, and they had a lot of clients where gaming would be really relevant. So the Navy was one of their clients. Chevrolet was one of their clients. The post office was one of their clients. And I had seen what Ford was doing in the space. So Ford had had, you know, placements inside of the Sims titles. Ford had done some really cool gaming mechanic type stuff. And so I was doing case studies on here's how Ford's doing it right. And my whole goal, really, to be perfectly honest with you, is to go to E3. I really wanted to go to E3 for the first
time.
Yeah. The perfect crime. Right. So I went to my first E3. My first E3 was E3 2009. So I presented to all agency management and convinced them to let me expense a geek out trip for me to go to LA for a week. And, you know, I was cold calling all these publishers saying, hey, I want to talk to you about, integration opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And then, I did that for a while at CE. And then I heard about this job at Ford where it was an emerging and social media analyst, job or specialist at the time. And, I heard about it through LinkedIn, and then I applied online, and then, I interviewed, and then I started in February 2010. So kind of what my job is I work in the digital marketing team where my job is to really leverage new technology to, talk to consumers, because we're seeing more people are spending less time on watching television and more time, less time on watching TV and more time consuming media, whether it's via their iPad or their mobile device or, their Xbox. So, part of my job, which is great, is I try and figure out how we can leverage gaming consoles or video games overall to, use them as a marketing medium. But the first thing I always do is I always think as a gamer before we start moving forward with some of these programs. I always say, if I saw this in real life, what would I say of it? Would I laugh about it and take a screenshot and post it on Reddit and say, this is the worst thing of all time? Or would I say, okay, this is an advertisement, but it's relevant to me, or Ford is giving me something back? And that's the biggest, you know, philosophy I've really helped to implement, is that we have to give something back to the gamer every time, you know, we do something in gaming. So whether it's in The Sims and we're giving you exclusive in-game items, like, you know, let's say some items for your home or some, you know, t-shirts, and then you can actually put the focus in your driveway, or whether it's like a program we do on Xbox Live where we give away 100,000 gamer points for Lincoln, where we shot some really great content with Kudo, who created Kinect, you know, so we create some really good content with him. Or, you know, like the stuff we did last year at E3 with Fiesta, where that was probably one of the coolest things I've worked on in the 2 years with the
and
company.
That lounge was really popular. I stopped by there a few times myself.
Yeah, it was funny because I think it was like February of last year, and we were sitting in a meeting room, and we had, you know, this program that we were going to work on where we had to remind people, you know, and reinvigorate the market about Fiesta. And, you know, the vehicle had launched a year before, and we wanted to figure out a way to really talk to this consumer again. And I asked, when do we want to be in market with this? And they said, oh, you know, May to, you know, the summertime. And I said, oh, let me take a look at who the consumer is. And, you know, I looked at who our target was, and gaming was something that really popped. And I kind of jokingly said, we should do something with E3. And everybody said, what's E3? And so, like, I had my geek out moment, and, you know, I kind of had to step back. I'm like, all right, guys, I'm going to be my Brian Geek Gamer here, so don't judge me too much. And I explained what E3 was and how it's, you know, the gaming event for the year, and, you know, how it's really VIP for people that get to go there because you have to be in the industry somehow. But, you know, more and more people, millions of people go online to see coverage of E3 if you can't be there. So, you know, before I went, I was glued to my computer screen for 3 days watching the press events, watching the floor demos, watching, you know, I'd get home from work, I'd watch the coverage on Attack of the Show or, you know, anything on G4. So, you know, we did a great media buy where we sponsored a lot of G4's coverage of the event on their channel. And then we sponsored a lot of great stuff on IGN. And then we had a booth at the show where we had two vehicles there, and we had a bar where you could sit down and relax and get a drink of water with attractive women serving you drinks. And we had a DJ and all this cool
stuff.
That's
why I kept coming back, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Pretty women actually bring people by a booth. Who would have thought? But no, it was a really great success. And, you know, it was something that I was kind of having everybody drink the Kool-Aid on. I was convinced, you know, trying to convince them that, hey, this is something really cool that we should do. And, you know, we had all these people saying, yeah, this is great, this is great, this is great. And I would even joke saying, it's going to work. If this doesn't work, I'll quit from Ford, or you can fire me. And I kind of got nervous leading up to the show.
Send me the bill.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, send me the bill. It'll bounce like a rubber ball. But, leading up to the event, like 3-4 weeks in, I was starting to freak out. I'm like, oh my God, what if this doesn't work? And oh my God, you know, I'm really having everybody, this is a big commitment for us, because we had been in gaming, but never anything, you know, on site. So, you know, we went to the event, people were stopping by, and really, I had some great footage of it. It's, something that worked really well. We saw some great results coming out of our media placements on G4. And, you know, now our task again for this year is, how can we do that again? And I'm really happy to announce we will be at E3 again this year. We'll be in the exact same place as we were last year. So
that's prime spot.
Yeah, yes. I'm giving a side questing exclusive. You guys are kind of like the first people I've
told. Nice.
So cue the music in the background. But we will be at E3 again this year with a badass booth. I saw some concepts of it the other day. We have some really great content. We've teamed up with G4 again to do some cool stuff, and we'll be on a few other placements online, and, you know, just trying to raise the bar even higher from what we did last year. So, you know, I urge anybody that's going to E3, keep an eye out for our booth, and that, I think it was the West Hall that we were in, I want to say, right by where Nintendo and Sony will be at. So before you go and check out the Wii U, or while you're waiting in line to walk into the show, make sure to stop by our event to say what's up and see our booth.
Very cool. So
awesome.
What's really interesting, and I'll give Brian is really touching on something that obviously I come from an automotive background, and E3 was always kind of my geek out moment, and I actually managed to convince convinced my management that, hey, we've got to start going to these things, because obviously in the design industry, which is where I come from, user interface is really important. The market of who you're designing to is really important. So, and gamers, obviously people who are playing games in the 80s and 90s are now buying these vehicles, right? They now have jobs. They're now fully kind of controlling some of that part of pop culture and that popular culture, yeah, that kind of stuff. And so, and it definitely fits in a lot of the demographics. And so I managed to convince my my company to let me go just as a fallback in case I didn't get my media credentials in. But I've been giving this presentation every year about, here's the stuff that's happening at E3, and this is, you know, here's this and that and this. And we've actually we actually work with some of the game companies ourselves for, you know, product design, product evaluation, that kind of stuff, which I'm not allowed to talk about, but it does happen. And so I guess where I'm leading to, sorry, this peanut butter cookie that I'm eating is still stuck to the top of my mouth. So where all this is leading to is that there's this, because of who's buying cars these days, especially with cars like the Fiesta and you know, things like that, and even the Focus, I guess. I know a lot of my friends are picking up the Focus and smaller cars like the Jetta and the Golf and things like that. They're,
wait till you see the Focus ST, dude.
Oh, dude.
See it.
Awesome. I've only seen sketches, so I'm hoping to see.
It's online. You'll be able to see.
It's true. There's this crossover happening now in terms of, A, part of it is just who the buyer is, and B, the technology is really crossing over. I mean, you look at games like Forza, right, where it's so technical, the latest Forza game, that cars drive like their real-world counterparts. And if you've driven a specific car, you know that it's driving correctly or incorrectly. At the same time, cars that we play in Forza and in other games can kind of influence us, or, you know, they're aspirational vehicles and so forth. So there's definitely a crossover happening, and we've been seeing, you know, automotive companies at some of these events just to get their name out. I think at Chevy was at PAX East this past year.
Which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because they were, it almost looked like a small dealership, and nothing against what Chevy was doing. I mean, it was great. They had a huge booth set up there. It was really, the reason I'm saying it was kind of weird is because you have all these video games going on around them. I mean, you have like Tribes next to them here. You have a bunch of indie games, and you have Chevy in the middle of nowhere.
You have Bumblebee walking around.
But at the same time, you start to think, actually, you know what? These worlds do cross over. Brian, you mentioned who the target market is in a lot of this stuff, and obviously it's some of the guys you're talking to on this podcast right now. We're the ones that are looking for these cool vehicles and fun cars, and we have different needs these days than people did 10 years ago. So
I think the biggest thing really is that, you know, we all grew up playing games, right?
Yes.
Grew up playing them, and I, you know, the philosophy that I quote is that gaming isn't something that you do, it's something that you are, right? So, you know, I still take the day off to play video games and I'm 30, you know? So, and, you know, I'll still be playing when I'm 40, 50. So it's something, it's a hobby, and it's something that you grew up with and really identify yourself with.
Yeah, Go ahead.
No, it wasn't me. I didn't say anything.
Oh, no, I was going to say, we're seeing a lot more of it now, right? Toyota has been at E3 in a light flavor. We just saw Chevy at PAX East. You guys were at E3 last year, and you're going to be at E3 this year. Can you tell us from your perspective? I mean, obviously you've been monitoring this stuff. You've been geeking out about games for so long. Can you tell us how or why you think the automotive market is now really getting into it? I mean, there could be a lot of other things. We've obviously seen cars tied to movies and things like that, but is there, you know, a much more of a conscious effort, or are things like social media helping kind of guide some of this kind of stuff?
I think it's a lot of different factors, to be honest with you. And I think the biggest thing is that you're seeing consumers, you know, Generation X, Generation Y, spending more time playing games than doing other activities, right? So playing games is eating into that pie chart that is media consumption more and more. And you know, our goal is we want to talk to consumers wherever they're consuming media. And, you know, my goal is to make sure it's a relevant message and not coming across as spam and something that you're going to laugh about and turn you off from the brand. So I think you're seeing more younger consumers, you know, entering the market, maybe buying their first or second real car. And, you know, you really want to hook the consumer at a young age and build that brand loyalty. So, you know, if your first car that you buy is a, you know, Focus, you know, and you have a great experience with it, you may become a Ford owner for life, and you got them hooked. You know, I think that's where the real opportunity is. And, you know, kind of the holy grail for marketers is the younger consumer, because then you can build that, you know, relationship with them. So you can continue talking with them and, you know, basically selling to them and then buying your product for the rest of their life. And then you build that loyalty, and then they'll say it to everybody else. So, you know, it always depends on, you know, what vehicle you're launching. Gaming isn't going to be perfect for every vehicle that we come out with. You know, it doesn't fit right with the Taurus because the Taurus consumer is a little bit older. You know, it worked well with Lincoln, which a lot of people laugh about, but Lincoln and the MKZ hybrid is a entry-level luxury vehicle. You know, right. The hybrid is, you know, it's an amazing car. It gets this, you know, the hybrid gets the same, you know, gas mileage as some of the other leaders in the space, and the hybrid costs actually the same amount as your standard MKZ, which is crazy. So, you know, we built this great content with Kudo, and, you know, it wasn't just him talking about Lincoln. It was about what inspires him in design. You know, what great content, you know, out there really inspires him. And then we just tied in the vehicle where it was relevant. So I think any person that asks me, they say, how can I get involved in gaming? I say, tread delicately, you know, because the first time you do it, if you do it bad, it's going to be bad forever. And people are going to remember you for it. And then if it doesn't go well, likely that leadership won't allow you to jump back into the space again. So you kind of got to tread very carefully in those waters.
Have you noticed more kind of gaming related content around your offices when now that this kind of stuff is starting to take hold?
Yeah, I think it's not as big of a sell for me as it was anymore.
Okay.
You know, when I joined the company, and even the guy who had my job before me, he was a big gamer too, and he's a big craft guy, which is hilarious, and he's become a really good friend. And it's funny because before the first few programs that I sold in, it was a really big sell job. It was, hey, here's what you think the gamer is, and I have a picture of a little kid playing video games with, you know, Dorito dust all over their mouth and drinking a Mountain Dew. And then, you know, my next slide is, but in reality, here's who gamers really are. And it's a picture of me and my best friend, you know, playing Madden while my wife was out getting her MBA on Tuesdays and Thursdays, because that's what to do. And, you know, then I go to a slide that says, hey, you know, here's how much was spent on CDs, you know, DVDs and movies, and then you add those three up, and that equals to what was spent on games. So, you know, it was a big sell when we first walked in, but, you know, thankfully leadership, you know, saw the opportunity in it, and we've kind of done really well with the last few programs we've done. So, you know, I just walked in and sold a program this morning to my boss's boss on gaming, and he's like, yeah, McClary, you got it. This is going to be it. So that was a big win for me. So
I think it's really exciting to see where these worlds are kind of crossing over. One of the things that personally I'd love to see with gaming and automobiles, and feel free to let me know if I have to bleep this out if this is treading too closely. So you guys have played Forza, right? All three of you guys have at some point played Forza.
Yeah,
for like 15 minutes, even though I've owned it since Christmas. Goddamn backlog.
Yeah, that stupid backlog. There's a Kinect, for instance, there's Kinect, interoperability in Forza, right? So you can actually,
technically,
the only part that I care about is being able to walk around a car and do a virtual look at some of the, you know,
I think Steam just locked up.
Some of the things that, you can kind of see at a car. I always thought it'd be kind of cool if you had, and now with like Microsoft and Sony and I guess even Nintendo getting more into that entertainment and media aspect and kind of pushing some of that content, I'd love to see, you know, a Kinect enabled virtual dealership where it's sponsored by Ford or Chevy or whoever. You log in and walk up to your TV and you take a virtual tour of the next Fiesta.
It's so funny you say that, because I'm not sure if you mess around inside a PlayStation Home.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we actually built, like, a light dealership in there and gave people the opportunity to, like, look around inside the Fiesta on the Edge and, you know, see that stuff. And that was another project that, you know, worked really well, and it was just, like, a test. So it's interesting. You make a good call that, you know, those kind of things are a really big investment from a marketer. you know, to do those kind of things are, you know, a really hefty investment. And, you know, I wish I had unlimited marketing dollars, but I don't. But it's something I'd love to try and do to some extent, too. But my big question, though, is does the user really want that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I think the stuff that was done inside of Forza was great, where they had the, you know, the panoramas, right? Or what did they call them again? The
it was the
something of the V.
Yeah.
Auto Vista.
Yeah.
So I thought that was all really cool. And, you know, whenever you saw it, it looked great, but I haven't, you know, used it. You know, I have Kinect and I, you know, I basically just played the game and raced. I didn't jump in and really carry it around. And the whole motion gaming thing, to some extent, I'm a little bit skeptical on. Like, I have Kinect.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, if you play Mass Effect, did you use the Kinect enabled stuff on it?
Minimally. It's, you know, it's a cool idea. And I don't want to have to yell, yeah, I think you're wrong, and then have him say something that I didn't say. And I think, you know, I'd love it if Call of Duty had some type of voice interaction or some type of FPS where you're speaking into the
Kinect. Ghost Recon will. Remember they showed it at E3 last year?
They did, yeah. Where you're actually speaking into it and it's speaking back to you instead of, you know, interpreting what you're saying. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, you're not finding too many huge fans of motion.
Yeah, the thing I'm looking forward to most in motion gaming is, oh God, my mind went blank. From Software.
Fable?
Mech game.
The
Fable carriage horse racing game?
No.
No, not Armored Core.
God.
I know exactly what you're talking, the one that was at PAX East, right?
Yeah, and it came out like 10 years ago for the Xbox and had a stupid controller.
Warrior? No, it's so close. It's not the submarine game. It's shoot. I know exactly what you're talking about, Eric. It's, you know what? Someone's gonna freaking punch us for now. Anyways, yeah.
But no, it's really exciting that, you know, I work with a company who actually gets it, and it's not a big
Steel Battalion.
Steel Battalion, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really cool that I get to do this stuff, and, you know, that's like awesome. I get yelled at a lot at work because I'll tell my boss, I'll say, I can't believe you pay me for this stuff. Like, you know, whether it's I'm on my, you know, one of my favorite gaming blogs, and, you know, that's considered work for me to look at that stuff. And,
sure.
You know, that stuff. So it's, you know, really exciting. And the stuff that we're going to be doing for, you know, E3 this year, I'm really geeked about. And I'm really excited to see how people react to it. Because a lot of the time last year, people were like, what is Ford doing here last year? But I think some other marketers have done it the wrong way. I won't call anybody out. But just having a vehicle there with a stanchion sign and letting people read about the vehicle, I don't think is the way to do it. I think you need to create an experience where, you know, like our booth last year, we gave you a place to sit down and relax, because at E3 there's nowhere to sit, you know, there's like nowhere for you to just relax. So, you know, we want to give something back and really give people something for, you know, engaging with our brand. And a lot of people didn't know what Fiesta was. They'd come up and say, what is this, what car is this? And I'd say, it's the Fiesta, and, you know, give my sales pitch and tell them about Sync a little bit. And we had a Mustang there, which can't hurt because people love Mustang. You know, it's just a huge opportunity. I love working with the company, and, you know, I just love going to E3 because I get to see everybody there. You know, I'm on calls a lot of times with people on the West Coast or, you know, up in Canada or wherever, and I don't get to see them until it's at E3. So it's kind of like a family reunion a little bit, or like a high school reunion. So that's why I love it so much.
Awesome. Well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing what else starts to come out of Ford and the kind of the rest of the automotive industry outside of just racing games.
Stay tuned. We got some really cool stuff coming up. I mean, we have something really cool in the fall coming that I can't talk about yet, but I'm really excited for it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us on the episode this week. It was really cool having you on. We held you on for a couple hours here.
No, I loved it. I'll talk about this stuff till I'm blue in the face.
Definitely. And it's great that I can just imagine you sitting at your desk, like leaning back in a chair with an Xbox controller, playing Battlefield, and your boss coming by, Brian, what are you doing? You're like, research?
Yeah, I wish I had an Xbox on my desk, but in my man cave, I can say that at home. I'm like, oh, that's crazy, I gotta go do some work.
Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find you, get a hold of you, follow you, find out what Ford's doing?
Best bet, you know, for all things Ford related, go to Ford.com. We have a great site called social.ford.com where we have a lot of great, like, behind the scenes articles on stuff. Anything about me, I'm at Brian McClary on Twitter. It's pretty much brianmcclary.com, which is like my side blog, but it's just ridiculous that I even have that to begin with. But yeah, I mean, pretty much more than anything, learn everything about Ford and the really cool stuff we're doing. Check out Ford.com and check out all the really cool stuff we're doing there.
Cool. And at Twitter, where can they find you?
I'm at Twitter. I'm at Brian McClary.
Sweet. And I will, I'll have that in the wonderful show notes. You can find Mr. Eric Smith on Twitter and on SideQuesting. Where can we find you, Eric?
At LMM on everything.
That is very true. You actually.
Yeah, I've been made fun of twice for having a quote unquote crazy name in the past week. Two people have made fun of me. But guess what? I have that name locked down. You can find me everywhere with that one name.
That's true. Yeah, it's very helpful having a single.
Yeah, especially when your name is Eric Smith. Like, come on.
Yeah. There's another Brian McClary on Twitter. He's Brian J. McClary, and I think he gets pretty pissed.
You know what? I'm unlucky because there's actually another Dalibor Domofsky, and he uses the at Dalibor Domofsky tag. But really cool guy. He's actually an actor in Australia. So Now when you do a search for me on Google, you get either a car designer, an actor, a musician. It's like all these really cool things.
Brian J. McClary, I think, is like a hotel manager in Colorado.
Sounds like a great guy.
Actually, we joked about it once, but if you do a search for Cool Rat on YouTube, it's actually a guy who does covers, like folk covers of popular music. And he's actually puts a lot of time and effort in it. So we'll have to link to him more often on the site.
Oh, I dig it.
If you search for me, you'll find a murderer.
Yeah.
So have fun with that.
Mike Bachman does like all walk-on roles on like NBC sitcoms. Like he was a security guard on Up All Night.
Up All Night. Wow. Oh,
man. Yeah. Mike, where can we find you? Besides being on Up All Night.
Yeah, you can find me at LMM1 because some asshole took the regular LMM. You can find me at the Mike Bachman, and then that's pretty much it. Just find me there.
Rock
don't look
roll.
Anywhere else. I don't exist.
And maybe one day you'll get Fistful of Pixels.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And at Fistful of Pixels for the podcast that I sometimes release when I feel like it.
That we miss. We love that show. Get it back going again.
Oh, God, I love it, too. No bias.
No bias. No bias. All other podcasts suck, but no bias. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to episode 405 of the Side Quest. It's been an honor having you wonderful gentlemen on, and we shall see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.